What's going on, Joe?
Very well, very well. Happy September.
Happy September. We're back in the lab.
Sorry, I'm in almost October. September is way past. I just haven't seen you for a podcast for September.
Yeah,
for about 2 weeks. Not talking about real estate, but how's your month so far?
Month's good. I'm very happy that we're not sitting in the fridge anymore because I learned to turn on the fireplace.
Nice. We have somewhere permanent that we can go going forward for the rest
of the year. Or else you guys would see us in our winter jacket. But no, life's good, you know. Baby's on the way and he's growing just fine. Wife is good and can't complain, really.
Doing the kicking, the punching and the kicking in the stomach.
Oh yeah, the whole alien versus predator. I see like a hand and a foot.
Freaks me out like crazy.
What about you?
Been good. Mom is enjoying summer. Mom is about to go back soon, so definitely. I have my freedom back. You know, I love my mom, but you know, not having to live with my parents for a really long time, then obviously being placed to a point where you can't even avoid it. It gets to you sometimes.
Hey, I'm sure she really appreciated it and her wallet also really appreciated it. So
Of course. getting into it, for what we're doing today. We're doing Brew News Roundup.
Yep.
For the month of September, we got some pretty serious
Oh my god, there's a lot of good stuff. Yeah.
What did we say about August? It's like, oh, it seems like even the journalist is taking a vacation. We didn't have anything too serious to talk about. And then September came and then
Bang.
So without further ado, I think this is going to be a pretty prolonged podcast, so why don't we get started with the first article and then back forth and talk about what we think about it.
This is perfect for anyone who has a long morning commute.
Yeah.
Okay, first one. Nearly half of non-homeowners in Canada think they'll never buy a home. Okay, clearly starting off a little bit morbid here. I apologize, but we really want to get the elephant out of the room. Owning real estate in Vancouver can appear to be unattainable to a lot of people. And if you currently feel that way, well, we're here to tell you that you're not alone.
No, I mean, yes, statistically prove that you're
not alone. Now, this article is by the semi-annual State of the Housing Report by Mortgage Professionals Canada. This mid-year report stated that 48% of non-home owners in the country feel like they will never be able to purchase a primary residence. A 15-point increase from the last survey done at the end of 2022.
That's major. 15 points in 1 year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And out of 77% of those non-homeowners added that they would change home buying plans because of high interest rates. Duh. And 30% noted that they'd delay their plans to buy a home altogether. So meaning that whole idea of buying a home, poof.
We have friends and families that we were initially hoping that's now in this stage.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of people that have actually moved back in with their parents throughout COVID has also surged astronomically. There's been a lot of articles about that too.
Exactly.
Now, for the people who do own a home, the report highlights that those who considered selling increased 3x.
Wow.
So from 2% to 7%. And obviously, we've had a lot of discussion as to why that might be.
Mm-hmm.
72% of homeowners also noted that interest rates are having a material impact on their current financial situation. What's that term people use? You're house rich but cash poor. Yeah, most of the people in Vancouver are feeling that also if you do own a home. So
they're
again,
fake millionaires.
Fake millionaires.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So again, I want to bring the example of what we used last month. Joe had a very, very good analogy. We're using a benchmark price, let's say $2 million for a detached home in Greater Vancouver area. You're mortgaging 1.6, so that means your monthly payments are about $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to a year ago, when interest rates were around 3%, they were only paying more like $7,000 or $7,500. So that extra $2,500 a month is significant for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a couple years ago, $2,500 a month might pay your mortgage on a condo.
Well, $2,500 is, actually, it is. It pays off a two-bedroom condo very comfortably.
Also, according to RateHub, you need to learn at least, listen to this, $246,100 a year to buy a home in the Greater Vancouver area. But that's because the benchmark price to buy a home was 1.2 mil.
Not 2 million.
That's not a detached home, okay? 1.2 mil is including condos and townhouses as well.
Yeah.
Is the situation messed up? Absolutely it is. Now, okay, what advice would we have for you guys? Like, I don't think Joe and I out here are here to offer advice. This is just a suggestion.
We're not financial coaches.
No, we'll never tell you what to do, but you probably have heard of some of these things already. I would suggest that maybe we lower our cost of living by making some sacrifices here and there. Eating out less, downgrading your vehicle. Maybe you don't need a shiny new Mercedes, you know? Whether you're driving a Mercedes or a Mazda, it's still going to get you to the same place. The only thing that's different is that $20,000 price tag. That might save you a lot of money.
Maybe I always say, what do we use to say in pre-sale? One less Starbucks coffee a day will save you hundreds or sometimes even thousands of dollars a month.
I thought you were going to bring up that coffee analogy and like the Ferrari and like, you know, when people don't spend money on coffee, that's enough money to buy a Ferrari after X amount of years. And I'm like, bro, nobody's fucking driving a Ferrari, even if you don't drink coffee. So you're going to pull that analogy out and be like, yeah. But I do agree, you know, living beneath your means has always been a tried and true way of saving money. It's not the only way, but it can help. Another thing I would suggest is, okay, maybe pick up a side hustle. There's literally 10,000 things that you could start today
mm-hmm.
if you wanted to.
Yeah.
Even earning an extra $100 a week or $200 a week.
Yeah.
In a month, that's like almost a grand.
There's websites now that you don't have to leave your house. You just go on that website. They'll give you a job. It's responsibility based, and then you just do the work, you get paid X amount without even having to leave your computer.
I think the key thing that right now is that if you have time, we are all trading our time for money until you're at a comfortable stage where you can start leveraging it and then grow exponentially.
Right.
And also, can you relocate?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe living in the greater Vancouver area is a little bit unattainable right now.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you need to, instead of living in downtown Vancouver, move a little bit further.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with how flexible a lot of jobs are nowadays with like partial remote work.
Yeah.
Maybe you can make it work.
Yeah.
The last question or suggestion I would say is that I hope everyone can ask themselves like, hey, how long can you maintain your current lifestyle before you're in trouble? Ideally, you would like to be able to come up with a plan before you get there.
What do we always say? A good financial coach always says that you need to have at least six months of emergency money.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, nowadays with everything, you probably want to drag that a little bit longer. But we know that, but a lot of people actually don't know that. Even they do know that, they don't practice on it.
Oh,
and that's why there's an article. I mean, we didn't pull this up before the podcast. There's an article saying it's like, was it 40 or 50% of Americans are like one paycheck away from bankruptcy?
I believe that.
Yeah. And then they're saying that like less than like, even with a group that has a savings, that they'll run out of savings in like 3 months or something like that. I need to pull the article, but that's just, once again, going to the key point you saying save before you meet.
I know a bunch of people are probably listening and be like, yo, like saving 6 months worth of expenses, I'm living paycheck to paycheck right now. Okay, well, if you're living paycheck to paycheck, you're going to have to make adjustments where you can.
Yes.
And I'm just starting to be blunt. You got to make hard choices or you're living on the street. What's harder?
Yeah, I mean, especially with inflation, I mean, beer nowadays are like, what, $9 at a restaurant for a small and like $13, $15 for a large. I mean, you could probably cut that off and just buy some beer and go home to drink it.
But here's the thing. I don't think the cost of beer has increased that much from
whatever
from
it was
the
before.
Whole
thing.
No, I don't think so. Because after COVID, restaurants actually get 20% off wholesale. So they're actually getting a kickback from the government. What's really pissing me off when we're on that topic is that how I can walk into a restaurant, look at the menu, see a pound of hot wings or wings, and they're $21.
You're the restaurant guy. I don't want to go so deep into it, but I knew I was going to bring this up. You're going to be like, yo!
Yeah, you're talking about restaurants. $20 chicken wings.
Yeah.
I remember when chicken wings were like $8 a pound.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, that's not even that long ago.
Come on, they've like gone triple? Like,
triple. But anyways,
we're not here to talk about restaurants.
But
good
point. Good point. I'll add in my 2 cents in regards to this article. I have a different take on it a little bit. I definitely, first of all, let's just make this very clear.
Mm-hmm.
I feel for the young people. I said it multiple times on our podcast that when I was growing up in the early 2000s, like, you know, 2008, 2009, it seems like home ownership was really so hard.
Mm-hmm.
Paying $1,500 a month on rent is already so hard. I cannot imagine what the young kids are going through right now. But there is just something that I would advise. Everything that you said is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I would say is, I've been telling a lot of young people is, you don't have to buy where you live in terms
mm-hmm.
of real estate. Who said that your first home has to be exactly where you grew up?
Oh,
right? So what I'm trying to say is, as a quick reminder, any money that you put into something or through any investment that gives you a return mm-hmm. is an asset. Any investment that you put in that takes more money out of you is called a liability. So what I'm proposing is that since Vancouver houses or Greater Vancouver houses seem so out of reach, but you do have some of that money saved up, why not, instead of buying that shiny Mercedes, because trust me, there's a lot of people in our city that's driving nice cars for no apparent reason.
But it looks great for on Instagram, Joe.
But yeah, that's what we kept saying, it's keeping with the Jones, right? Why don't you take that money, do a little bit of homework, because trust, what are you doing between 6 to midnight every single night?
Anyways? I guarantee you, 90% of people listening, you're watching either Netflix, Disney Plus, or Amazon Prime.
No, YouTube, that's me. Anyways, what I was saying is, why don't you take that money, learn about other cities that you could potentially buy, learn about their economics, learn about their population growth. And if you feel like this is something that has a lot of future, why don't we enter that market, become a landlord, and build that asset until you are ready to move that money back into Vancouver and buy in Vancouver,
mm-hmm.
right? I could do this for Vancouver versus Surrey. I could do this for Vancouver versus Abbotsford, but I'm really talking about, why don't we consider Vancouver versus Edmonton?
Mm-hmm.
Or the more talk of the town recently is Vancouver to Calgary, right? That's the thing. As a reminder, you could pick up a one-bedroom condo in Calgary for less than $400,000.
Mm-hmm.
That will probably rent you something, a pretty nice rental return.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you do here? Well, you go find yourself, granted, if you can, a purpose-built rental. And right now in BC, there is a rental cap that is stipulated by the provincial government, but the other countries or maybe the other purple provinces don't have that,
mm-hmm.
right? So you're not getting your rent getting eaten by inflation,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's definitely ways around it, is what I'm trying to say. Your first home ownership does not need to be this nice, beautiful pre-sale with marble stones and air conditioning. So because you are now struggling to even pay for the mortgage on this,
mm-hmm.
stop it, find yourself a rental, or maybe a basement suite, for of a nicer house if you really don't want to live in a dump, right?
Mm-hmm.
Take that money, you pay a little bit less rent, take whatever money that you have saved, go invest in Calgary. Wait until that, oh, I don't know, let's say Calgary, Edmonton, what have you, that other city's money has come up, that it's growing much faster than the money that's growing in Vancouver. You take that money and you go buy yourself something here.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing that I thought about when I was reading about this
yep.
article. It's just the sense of entitlement sometimes will hinder how you build your equities.
Oh, the amount of complaints I see online about the real estate market, and I just want to shake, give these people a shake and be like, okay, you have a problem. What are you doing to fix it? Instead
right.
of just complaining.
Right. So here's another thing. And I think I said this last year in a particular podcast. I can't remember. If you really think about other people, other young people from other countries, their first home is generally utter garbage.
Mm-hmm.
Their first home isn't built by what have you a developer, marble stones, hardwood floors,
waterfront property.
No,
yeah.
A lot of people, first time home buyers in other countries, their first home is like ground floor, carpet that probably has some blood stain on it, right? And then like, and the drywall needs some painting. It probably smells like cigarette butts, right? And then what they do? They go in and they fix that up. And they call that their home, build equity out of that. When they make more money, they move on to something else. Right?
I think people just really have to learn to adapt to the current times and situation. Like we said, we keep saying, don't compare to other people. Everyone's situation is different.
Exactly.
Just find out what works for you. What is it that you really want? Is home ownership your ultimate goal? Okay.
Yeah.
There's a plan for that.
Exactly. Now, another thing I want to bring up in regards to this is I was kind of doing a little bit quick research about home ownership in Canada in relationships to the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Because we got to understand, okay, is this a Canada problem or this is something that's actually a little bit better, bigger? Because I just had a feeling that we are heading into a lot of what other continents are have already been doing. So what I did is I Googled Wikipedia and I basically just went home ownership. By country. So as of 2021, Canada, we're currently sitting at 66.5% of homeownership. I'm just going to give you a quick list and the percentages. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to flip that around and
mm-hmm.
give you something that's significantly higher homeownerships, and you tell me where the pattern is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So these are some of the countries that has homeownership that is lower than Canada.
Mm-hmm.
US at 65.9%.
Mm-hmm.
Sweden, great country, at 64.9%. New Zealand, great country, at 64.5%. UK is sitting at 63%. Saudi Arabia, 62.08%. Iran, 60.5%. South Korea, 57.3%. Japan, 55.04%. Germany, 49.9%. Switzerland, 42.2%. UAE 28, Hong Kong 22.1%. As you can see, the pattern here for this list is for a lot of first world countries, they don't have a lot of home percentage in terms
mm-hmm.
of homeownership. Now, as for promise, I'll flip it around. I won't make it this long. I'll just give you 8 to 10. Number one, in terms of homeownership, Laos 95.9%. Second, Romania, one of the poorest countries in Europe, 95.3%. Next one, Kazakhstan, sitting at 95%. Hungary at 91.7%. Croatia, beautiful country, at 90.5%. Cuba, 90%. Vietnam, 90%. Serbia, 89.4%. I'm going to leave you this before we move on to the next conversation is, which of the above we considered as a first world country?
Mm-hmm.
Just a food for thought.
I really like that.
A little homework. Sorry about that. With that being said, next topic.
Right here, it says Canada still needs 3.5 million more homes to improve affordability. Wow, is that higher or less than what you and I thought?
I think
it sounds like it's way higher. Obviously, this has been a topic of conversation for Joe and I for quite some time now.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to see that we actually have some statistical data to back it up.
Yeah.
The CMHC, which is Canada Mortgage Housing Corporation, has indicated 3.45 million additional homes are still needed by 2030 in order to restore affordability levels nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
This is an update to the original estimate made in 2022 at 3.53 million.
Mm-hmm.
So, progress is progress, I guess. That's 800K less. What do they mean by affordable? Is that it would return to the levels around 2003 and 2004. Okay, Joe, you were around at that time, weren't you?
I was around, not really.
I'm just kidding. Joe's not that old. Okay, what does that mean? Let's go back into a time capsule. 2003, 2004, HPI price was probably around 350K.
Yeah,
for a home?
A little bit, yeah.
The data, the Stats Center only goes back 10 years, so I can only go back to about 2005, and that's what it was at, around 350K. So let's just say 300K, give or take. It seems like just a dream if you talk to any millennial, Gen Z, or later,
yeah.
But that's exactly what it was at.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing it a little bit closer to home out of the 3.5 million houses that we need, Ontario needs about 1.48 million, and BC needs 610,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I feel like this article brings up a good point as well, is that they're not factoring how the economy is changing as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
The original report didn't foresee the economic slowdowns in 2023 with like the interest rates, inflation, construction financing right now is crazy expensive alongside with construction costs being super high,
mm-hmm.
and also materials, labor, etc., etc. So you basically have a huge need for more housing, but it's also super expensive to build,
mm-hmm.
and to build quickly and with good quality.
I mean, it's not expensive to build quickly. It's almost impossible.
You only get a 2 out of 3. If you want good quality, good price, and fast, you can only get 2.
Yeah.
You don't get 3 out of 3.
Yeah.
So what's going on right now is the goal of high interest rates is to slow down spending. But if you build more homes that become affordable, more people are going to spend. So wouldn't that become a little bit of a vicious cycle that we can't get out of?
Mm-hmm.
And let's not forget that we're also trying to get our population to 43 million by 2030.
Jesus.
This whole scenario, when I'm thinking about it, sounds really, really messed up. There are some things that governments are doing,
mm-hmm.
Which we might talk about later with like the GST,
yeah.
removal of GST for purpose-built rentals. Okay, great. We'll talk about that later. That might help a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But the last key point I want to bring up in this article is how the CMHC provide an update on the home price increase between 2019 to 2030. Within BC, the home price increase they forecast is 76% as a baseline.
Okay.
66% for low economic growth and 90% for high economic growth. In 2019, the benchmark price for a home was, I think,
900K.
That means that they're forecasting that by 2030, they will have 1.58 million as a baseline.
Mm-hmm.
1.494 million for slow economic growth. And at the peak, 1.71 million with high economic growth. I really look forward to us circling back 7 years later to see if these numbers are correct and if the CMHC does have a crystal ball. Whoever it is, that forecaster, I'm going to definitely hopefully get an interview with them.
This is a very specific prediction. I'm shocked that they're able to.
They usually don't do that because they give themselves an out. They give a generalization, just like how they forecasted how home prices would decrease by 5% within the first quarter or whatever it was of 2023. And you know what? It didn't hit that number. But I want to know what you thought about this.
Well, first of all, I think I'm going to start off by CMHC wasn't correct about a price analysis for this year. CMHC was not correct about the price analysis during COVID. So, me personally, I'm not going to tell everybody, I'll take this with a pretty huge grain of salt.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with a grain of salt, what do I mean by that is, generally CMHC under reports,
mm-hmm.
under, goes there because they're always going super conservative, super conservative, super conservative. That's why when COVID happened, they're like, oh my God, the price is going to go down. And then when we started raising interest rate, oh my God, price is going to go down.
Mm-hmm.
And none of that has actually happened. So with that being said, I know this $1.584 million is a baseline for HPI for 2030. If CMHC continues this pattern, 1.71 should be the baseline, I would think. And actually,
oh God.
1.584 should be kind of the slow economic growth. And I think it's going to be like 1.9. Should we have a high economic growth again? Between now all the way to 2030. That kind of make, to me, that kind of makes a little bit more sense. I don't know, that's just my initial thought. Now, another thing, I was reading the article while you're kind of explaining to the listener, you didn't mention about Quebec needing 860,000 new homes. What is happening in Quebec that needs 860,000 new homes?
Sorry, Quebecois are not.
No, I'm not saying, I just don't. If you're from Quebec or you're from there, can you tell me? Because I'm so confused because we have clients that's from Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just like, the market is really slow here. Nobody's buying anything.
Mm-hmm.
But they need 860,000 more homes. Wait, something is not adding up. That's the first thing.
Maybe it's a typo. It's 86,000.
Sorry. Now, let's quickly just talk about population growth. We just surpassed 40 million. So what that really means is this article is saying that in the next 7 years, we're gonna grow another 4 million people.
No way.
All these 4 million people will need a place to live. You mean no way as in-
It's gonna be way higher.
Okay, that's my thought.
We talked about this last month. They undershot their non-PR residents by 1 million. So, 43 or 44 million? It's going to be
44, so 4 more million.
Okay.
We just surpassed 40, and they want to hit 44.
I wouldn't be surprised if we're at fucking 46 million.
I don't disagree with you. And that's why I actually wrote that down. Like, really? 4 million? First of all, 4 million people need a place to live.
Mm-hmm.
6 million people, they need a place to live. So all these people need a place to live, right? Now, here's another thing people definitely need to consider. Even if we are able to build all these homes, I highly doubt it, okay? These has to be affordable homes up there.
Mm.
And if we just keep building luxury high-rises, we're just gonna be stuck with a lot more homeless people, and now we have all these homeless, people have empty houses. Kind of like what's happening with New York City right now.
Hey, at least the government will still get their speculation.
All I'm gonna say is, if we just keep building these luxurious homes and each project being even better than the previous ones, then we're just gonna shoot ourselves in the foot because
mm-hmm.
then you're gonna have a bunch of people that has no place to live, and now you're gonna have a bunch of landlords or rich people who's like, I don't wanna rent this out to people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that is the reason why we're just talking about this before the podcast started, that more than 50% of the homes in the billion-dollar row in New York City sits empty.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's more like a bank.
more than anything.
So that's why when I watch the videos, they're not actually staged properties. They're just actually nobody living in it.
No,
that's why it looks like that.
What?
It's such great condition.
Yeah, like, did you see that one? That was $153 million. You think someone is living in that? Come on.
No, I'm pretty sure it's just a way for them to launder their money, but what do I know?
Exactly, right? Now let's talk about building these houses, because the previous statement I made was making the assumption that we are able to build all these houses.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of assumption, because that's a lot of homes. And how are we going to be building all these homes? We need, first of all, do we even have the labor for it? Because
mm-hmm.
young people, Gen Zs, or even us, who wants to get into, nobody wants to get into construction.
Yeah.
What, you ask a kid nowadays, what do they want to do? I want to be a YouTube star.
I want to be a TikTok star.
Yeah, I want to be an influencer. Nobody is willing to go, you know what? I want to be a plumber. I want to be an electrician. I want to be building houses.
Let's not even talk about trades, okay? Even in the medical field, they're not pushing people to be doctors or lawyers. Who wants to go through that amount of schooling, incur that much debt, only to make less than what that child YouTube star is making? What's the point?
Exactly.
There's so many different ways.
Exactly.
Or someone can just sell their bathwater or feet pick somewhere, you know?
Man, you go on weird ass websites. But the key thing is, trades is not a sexy job. And what people want nowadays is just sexy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because IG, Facebook, social media, YouTube, like, you know, the brainwashing you that is what a regular person is supposed to be, which is not good. Okay, so we can't have the local people build these homes, so we have to start getting foreign workers from outside in.
Already what they're doing, which is why they expedite a lot of people that are working skilled fields.
Okay, yeah, but my only problem is, okay, to build these homes, you need X amount of labor people, and then we're already saying Canadians don't want to do it, so we're going to grab foreigners from other countries to do it, and guess what they need? They need a place to live too. And we're definitely not China. We don't just build portable and just house all the construction people right at the back of the construction site for months on end, and when it's done, just tear down the portables. Like, we don't do that, right? So that, once again, it's a vicious cycle. You need people to build. Well, you need all these homes that needs to build, and you need the people to build. And in order to have the people to build, you need more houses to house these people. You see where I'm going with this?
What's the right answer?
You know what? We do these podcasts because we're not the ones with the right answer. We just want people to really start critically thinking about what's actually happening out there, right?
It's just so much more complicated than...
Build more homes! Just build more homes! Why are you not building? Lower taxes! Build everything! Like, it's not as easy as that. And that is how we're going to conclude this article.
Yeah.
Let's move on to something not maybe that serious.
Yeah. Okay. We've hit you guys with a couple of hard ones. This one's a little funnier depending on which
which side of the fence.
Here it says short-term rental license fee in Vancouver to be hiked from $109 to $1,000.
Woo! 10x.
How's that for sticker shock for this headline? So. The annual licensing fee for the city of Vancouver will grow by over 800%. And you can probably bet that if Vancouver is doing this, other cities will probably soon follow. Now, originally they proposed it to increase to only $450, but there's a city councilor who won't be named, said that it was quote unquote not enough. They then got the unanimous approval for it to go up to $1,000. So this brings about an extra $2.6 million in revenue for the municipal government. And what they say it'll do is that it will help offset the cost of improved enforcement of regulations, cracking down on illegal short-term rentals, and improving public communications to homeowners who may not understand the regulations due to a language barrier. I'm just going to put that there. You guys can make your own interpretation.
Yeah.
As a comparison, in Kelowna, they charge, I think, $345, Squamish $500, and Nelson between $200 to $800 for a licensing fee. Now, I could be wrong, but I feel like a regular business license only costs about $150 or less than $200. So, are they targeting Airbnb for a specific reason? Still, not as crazy as what they're doing in New York when you compare the two, but is this really going to help with the housing crisis? Or is this just another tactic the city is using to distract us from making the really tough decisions? You guys put on your thinking caps. You're all smart people. You guys decide.
And I'll just add on to it is this is my personal opinion. If they're going to do this, I have a feeling that they are going to maybe start leaning more towards the way of what New Yorkers did.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're also getting, another reason why I think they're doing this is also they're getting enough social pressure now.
Mm-hmm.
For them to be like, yeah, we gotta talk about this a little bit.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. I literally think that like they're watching what New York is doing.
Mm-hmm.
They're seeing how much attention it's getting.
Yeah.
They're seeing that it's actually getting public support.
Yeah.
And now they're like, this is something that we can do to make us look better too.
Exactly.
And they're kind of testing the waters out. By making this policy first, it's kind of a bridge between making that final decision.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't get enough complaints for it, they might just say, okay, we'll do it.
Yeah, exactly, because
either way, they're either making an extra $2.6 million a year,
or they're getting votes.
Or they're getting votes. A lot of people they'll be like, "Hey, you're bringing more supply back into the market."
And this is the point. Now, I would say it would suck to own Airbnb stocks or any, or honestly, just work for Airbnb or the owner of Airbnb, because
mm-hmm.
it feels like you are now the next scapegoat for all this real estate problem.
Yeah, except this is like a global thing now. So
yeah.
At least if you live in North America,
mm-hmm.
you could be in a little bit of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in other country, like let's say Thailand or something like that, maybe you're still relatively safe.
Right. Now, I have no proof or numbers to back up that's what the city might want to do. It's really just like a feeling that I have that they're trying to create a scenario where it's a win-win situation for them,
mm-hmm.
regardless of which way this is gonna go.
Yeah.
Right. Secondly, obviously, you saw me roll my eyes a little bit in regards to what they're gonna do with the $2.6 million. I literally wrote there, right here, there's gotta be a better way to spend that money.
What are they gonna do? Like send out an email blast and flyers with the policy in multiple different languages? And hope that people get it? Are they going to send people to knock on these Airbnb's doors and serve them with a notice? Like, come on, man.
Dude,
if you're going to start a policy to increase a fee by 800%, I would hope that you have a follow-up that gives a little bit more detail of how you're going to spend the money. This just makes people not trust the government either.
Exactly. And for me, it's just like, really? Language barriers to use to educate people for Airbnb? Really? Like, they're using Airbnb. I think they know.
And that's the best excuse? Why isn't the government's responsibility to make sure that everyone coming into Canada knows one of its two primary languages?
Yeah.
Which is English and French,
yeah.
Not English and Chinese.
Exactly,
okay?
Yeah. Or, I'll add on to that, or they plaster you with 18 languages.
Yes.
All at the same time on one piece of paper, as if like you understand all 18 languages there, right? Anyways.
And rent. Okay.
Next topic.
Hit him with the next one. Here we go. Housing costs, affordability issues might be lowering Canada's fertility rate.
Might be?
Okay, we already know your stance. Stats Canada has found that the sky-high housing and living costs may be contributing to our nose-diving fertility rate. Young Canadians, and this is how they categorize us. I'm so that's a young Canadian, even though I'm not in this
group. I was like, yo, your script has their age bracket.
Their age is 15 to 29. Okay, 15 to 29. I might not be in that age group anymore, but I still consider myself a young Canadian. Okay,
okay.
Just because you're old.
I'm young Canadian.
That accounts for 19%, roughly 7.3 million people, of Canada's population in 2022.
Yeah.
Now, this demographic indicates that they are less satisfied and less hopeful about the future. And they are more likely to choose not to have kids for financial reasons compared to older adults, the 30-plus group.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those aged 20 to 29 also say that housing and affordability concerns are the significant factors influencing their decisions about having children. In 2022, 38% of adults in this age group didn't believe that they could afford to have a kid in the next 3 years, and 32% didn't think they'd have access to suitable housing to start a family in the next 3 years.
Low.
I really wanted to bring this article up for debate because I think this is a very polarizing topic. Joe and I both share different opinions here for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, this hits a little closer to home for me because I'm going to be a father soon. And to me, it really depends on your own individual perspective. I think many people avoid having kids because they only think about the financial implications. But to me, birth and child and like bringing a child into this world is so much more than just that. It's so rewarding and so fulfilling in so many ways that we can't even begin to imagine. And for starters, okay, having another human being solely rely on you 100% for survival, that is like, I don't know, a really, really big thing for me. And it really does become another driving force and motivator to provide for this human being, because they didn't choose to be born, right? Mm-hmm. As kids, we don't choose to be born. Mm-hmm. As parents, it's our responsibility to make sure that they're taken care of.
Right.
And I feel like there have been many, many success stories of people who, after parenthood, that was kind of the turning point for them in their career, where they really, everything aligned, and their career just like skyrocketed.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, everyone has a different experience. Everyone has a different purpose in life. I'm not telling you you should go and have kids, but you also don't need to compare yourself to another set of parents.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say another set of parents put their kids in the most expensive daycare.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Canadian government also has a very great childcare program.
Mm-hmm.
Take what you can and make adjustments where you can.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think that's just society putting pressure on you guys, on us, to maintain a certain type of lifestyle. Like, imagine our grandparents having kids. I guarantee you, my grandma didn't give my mom an iPad or a cell phone or like whatever extracurriculars,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Like, kids only need a little bit of time and attention from their parent. That's what they need the most. They don't need the shiniest new toys or to join every single sports program. Another thing I want to point out is like, if we stop having kids now and we make an educated and informed decision not to have kids, who is going to be leading society and who's going to be running the countries and government tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be the people that might not necessarily should be having kids or are educated. And you know what? You can say what you want, but that's my personal stance on it. I really think that we should be continuing the population in a smart way. Like, don't be dumb about it. Like, don't be 16 and like decide that you want to have 5 kids. Okay, no, maybe don't go down that route. But we do have an opportunity to make tomorrow better than it is today. And maybe I'm just a dreamer and I'm like an optimistic in that way, but I really do believe that we can.
I'm going to say what I agree with you with, and then I'm going to have my little piece
mm-hmm.
in regards to this conversation. As the listener can tell, we have different opinions. Like Jeff said, he's
mm-hmm.
the one with the kid, so that obviously makes me the one that really don't want to have a kid. But I agree
for now.
No, this is it. Now, I'm going to agree with two things that you said. The joy, I don't planning to, but I can imagine the joy that you get from raising a kid who is 100% dependent on you would surpass any other things in life because it's built into our DNA. And some things I read about this the other day, is like, why do you think sex feels good? Because it's built in your DNA, because we're meant to reproduce. That's one of the core
evolution
of our DNA. So I agree with you on that. I don't think I'll ever experience what you just said, but I can 100% imagine that joy of bringing up a kid will surpass everything else in life. And
mm-hmm.
I talk to enough parents to completely understand that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I agree. Second thing I do agree with you is you don't need all the bells and whistles to raise a kid. You do have certain costs that I'll talk about.
Basic needs. Yep.
That cost has gone up, let's be honest. And that's kind of, but like I said, it's like there's no point to throw them into private schools, monetary daycares. Like, I agree with that. You don't need that. A kid who is going to do what's going to be book smart, they're going to be book smart no matter if they're in a private school or in a public school.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to do well. If they're going to be a doctor, they're meant to be a doctor, they're going to do it in a private or in a public school setting.
Mm-hmm.
Right? However, that's everything that I agree with you kind of stops, right? I've been really looking, and I think I've been talking to you long enough about this world depopulation thing for a while. I listen to all the podcasts, you know, Joe Rogan talks about it, Andrew Huberman talks about it, and I have read through some papers in regards to this. It is a very, very complicated issue.
Mm-hmm.
I personally feels like it's gonna come in waves. Like we're not gonna go, oh my
god,
no,
it's gonna go to zero.
We'll
just start dying off.
Is that how Dinosaur likes? Say, imagine if that's actually how Dinosaur likes.
The apes, that's what happens.
So I, like I said, similar to the article, have decided that I don't want to have any kids in the future. And personal, I would say my upbringing does play a factor into it. And also kind of what I project the future to look like. So I'm just going to, at this point, I'm going to openly talk about it. The number one reason of me not wanting a kid is true to this article is the cost of raising a kid. Now, I understand I talked to you just now about you don't need all the bells and whistles, but still, like if they don't need to go to private school, there is a certain set cost to raising a kid. And that cost is, it's pricey. It's up there. It's like almost another human being. Like it's almost
cost or investment.
Well, I don't want to get into that social thing, right? We can talk about it in another podcast. Let's just start off with what hits home with this particular podcast, which is real estate.
Yeah.
Okay. You said having a kid won't increase your cost that much, but me,
I didn't say it won't increase your cost that much.
It will increase your cost, but not to an amount what a lot of people say. What did it say? Before they're 18, you have to cost a million.
Something like that.
I'm tackling that point.
Yeah.
However, what I'm trying to say is it's not 1.5, but I would say that there is a number between 0 to 1.5 that is suitable here. What do I mean by this? It's like, for example, if it's just you and your wife, fiance, a one-bedroom condo would do. It generally would do, right? For most people. Yeah, that's just a couple. But the moment you have a kid, you go for one bedroom to two bedroom. Okay, now let's nominally put this in, okay? Because what you're gonna do, put your kid in the living room. Me, as a family who grew up with me and two of my brothers sharing the same bedroom until I'm deep into my high school, I can tell you that, no, that's not the way you should be raising kids, right? So what I thought about is, okay, if say a one bedroom for Vancouver, rental expert,
okay.
One bedroom, how much is that now?
28.
28? Two bedroom, realistically.
38.
So let's say $1,000 difference. That means by me having this kid, just the real estate portion alone, it needs to be I need to have $1,000 more a month. Not including food, not including insurance, not including clothing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? For some people who is just surviving and crawling by, that's detrimental to them. Right? I'm not going to get into, oh, maybe this $1,000 is better for me to go to the pub or do whatever, right? But I'm just talking about people who are struggling. So that's the first thing, right? The second thing is, a lot of people nowadays, they think in terms of investment returns, right? If I put this much effort and this much thing, how much am I gonna get back, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people nowadays are extremely career driven, right? So having a kid, they probably don't wanna have that because by having a kid, they have to take time off their work. So that's, you lose money from taking money in, right? And then what happens is that you, after the kid is out, you now have to take care of the kid, which means you can't focus as much as on career anymore. So this number don't go back and surpass while you have your kids that you have to take care of. So the trade-off means that once I have a kid, I can make more money and have to spend more money.
I would say that that's only you looking at a statistic and saying that, okay, because I need to spend 4 hours more a day with my kid, that 4 hours I'm taking away from me making money. Statistically, that might work out, but realistically, you're probably only taking maybe 2 hours away from work and 2 hours out of Netflix. And I'm just saying that, I get what you're saying there, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I honestly do feel like this becomes a situation where kids aren't for everyone. I think you and I both agree.
Yeah.
But I feel like there are certain people who should have kids and certain people that should not have kids.
Right. And my mom actually told me this. They say that the reason why people back in the days have a lot of kids is because they used to work at a farm. Kid is equivalent to free labor. As long as they survive the first 6-7 years. However, ever since urbanization, people moving into the city, kids nowadays is considered a luxurious good that you show up to your friends and family. This is actually coming from an older generation. It's not even coming from me.
I can see why that they would have that kind of viewpoint. It does kind of make sense to me.
Yeah.
It just makes me think about even myself. My sister and I were doing my dad's billing to his clients mm-hmm. when I was like 13. So that was, I guess, my first job.
Yeah. And that's not me. Like, there's obviously, this is not a one factor thing. It's not just real estate that's causing, you know, the low fertilities and stuff. Obviously, like, another really obvious pattern that they keep talking about is once women get educated, they just want to have less kids. That's because they focus more on their career than they focus more on being a mom. Right? And that plays into a factor of it as well, because there is a statistic pattern saying that once this country, everyone's getting educated, including the females, the fertility rate drops significantly, immediately, mm-hmm. right? So that's kind of what I want to say about that. There is one more thing that I would say why I don't want to have kids is because, to bring out what you said, our future, which doesn't have a lot of kids, does look a little bit scary, which makes me don't want to have kids even further.
You're part of the solution. It's not a problem. I think you'd be a great dad. And Rita, you'd be a great mom.
But let me share with you what I mean by scary. Now, number one, I want to focus on is more political. As we have less of the younger generation, we live in a democracy country mm-hmm. where everybody, no matter if you're 120 till you're
19,
I almost said 18, you can have one vote. So if we are going to have less kids and there's a general going to be a lot more older people, I just personally feel like the younger generation doesn't even have a chance to represent themselves.
But that's only what they want you to think. The statistics from polls after every election shows that there are not enough young people voting.
That defeats the purpose, because older people is just gonna, older people generally who have more money, mm-hmm. is just gonna squeeze as much as they can get out of the young people.
You're just projecting yourself into the future. You're going to be one of those old people squeezing the younger generation.
Well, I mean, no, but I mean, there's patterns to it. I mean, NIMBYism is one of it, right? There's no young people talking about NIMBYism, okay? Don't build this in my backyard. It's all people who has money and who's a little bit more age. And we're like, yo, you can't do this here.
Okay.
Because I deserve A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
I will give you that. You remember that article we talked about with Jericho and the project there? I guarantee you, the most people that are voting that they shouldn't build the high rises is probably of an older demographic.
Mm-hmm. And you realize that in the demographic that you generally have harder time making it, well, the areas that they have problems doing any changes are generally the areas where there's just more older people around.
Yep.
And all I'm saying is we're going to reduce the amount of younger people, so even, let's say the worst case scenario, and we're just talking about this right before the podcast, let's say the situation gets so bad one day,
mm-hmm.
a 500,000 people, young people, revolt, is going to feel really different than only 100,000 people doing it,
mm-hmm.
right? Because 100,000 people, we can kind of take care of this, right? 500,000 people, you're like, okay, we can't take care of this anymore. We got to do a regime change,
mm-hmm.
right? That's what I'm saying, right? Because like the younger generation is going to be very...
Man, if you run into a situation like that, then the robots have already won.
You know what? That's me. Yeah, you know what? Yes. 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 I thought about it. Yes. Now, second thing, let's talk about the stuff that obviously a lot of people generally do care about.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it be conspiracy theory, I don't want to use that word, or not, is the fact of global warming,
mm-hmm.
right? These are the facts. Extreme weathers and flooding and droughts are getting more and more common.
Mm-hmm.
Is it not? It is, right? Can you imagine if this pattern continues 30 years from now? If your kid was born with a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
then they don't have to worry. Just flooding? I'll just fly my helicopter and then go up to the mountains and just live there, right? Unfortunately, I wasn't born with, excuse my language, the fuck you money,
mm-hmm.
right? So how can my kid... how can I keep my kids safe? Should one of the worst things happen in terms of flooding,
mm-hmm.
in terms of forest fire, in terms of all of this stuff, right? Again, this gets really into conspiracy theories, but I'll just add on to it. It's like, if you haven't been reading about what's happening with Maui and Lahaina, the
mm-hmm.
specific town, I don't know if you know, but during those wildfires, one of the things that's been reported is that none of the rich people's property even
got close to the situation, right? And then it was only kind of the residents, the local people that's been there, who's been living there for hundreds or thousands of years, right? Their home got impacted. And how is it that all the rich people are fine and all the not so well off people are not okay, and you call that the act of God? And I'm not gonna get into the situation there. They're saying that there is, you know, when a firefighter got there, the roads are blocked to certain areas, there's no water in certain areas. Even if the firefighter was able to go and they plugged their thing into the fire hydrant, there was no water coming out.
It's like, how can you be in an island and have no water?
Mm-hmm. Exactly, right? And at the end, the government just goes, everybody gets $700, and that's it. While you have rich people with the realtors calling these people and say, hey, we'll buy your land pennies on the dollar because you don't have a house on it anymore. Gets you thinking.
Capitalism.
It just gets you thinking, right? Another comment I want to make in regards to this is I do see a pattern, I don't know if you did, between home ownership, what we talked about now before, and fraternity, what we're talking about now, right? You remember that list that I was sharing with you?
Yeah, the third world countries and the first world countries.
Yeah, so I want you to take that list and I want you to plug those countries, the first world countries, into populationreview.com, which is basically just a worldpopulationreview.com. Basically, it's just a tracker for population overall. There's a pattern to it. You can see that most of them that's on the lower fraternity are generally on the lower half of reproduction.
That's what you mean, the lower rate of homeownership?
Yeah. Also results in
It supports your statement of the more educated the society becomes, the more they are inclined to not have children.
And not just that, what I'm also saying is that I support this article to a certain point, saying the high first world countries are generally where real estate is the highest.
Mm-hmm.
The highest real estate, when people can't afford real estate anymore, they generally just don't want to have kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And once again, I want to do this as a full disclosure. I don't think real estate prices, once again, is the only reason why people are not having kids. But all I'm saying is I see a correlation throughout it.
I agree with you. I would say that the real estate prices are definitely not helping, at least from a North American perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I really only want to hone into North America. I do see that the numbers reflect globally.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that this really sounds like people are making these decisions from a place of fear. They fear not having, so the have-not mentality, but instead they should be focusing on what is a possibility, at least personally for me. When you make a decision that's fear-based, you're not thinking clearly, you're not making the best decision for yourself. That's always why historically you control people through fear. And I know this gets a little bit more like, you know, conspiracy, and I don't want to go down that route. All I'm trying to say is that, hey, we have the power to make tomorrow better than today.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to do that, we only have a finite time on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do with that time really matters.
I agree. So I'm going to push you back on exactly what you said, but with my flavor mix into it. Yes, people not having kids is really a result of fear.
Mm-hmm.
Fear of unknown, fear of what's gonna happen to me,
mm-hmm.
self-centered, selfish, whatever, right? But what I wanted to say is, oh my God, I got to kind of completely lost my train of thought. So I agree with you on that regard. What were you saying? Sorry, what were you saying just before this? I completely just lost my train of thought.
I was saying how this is them trying to control people through fear. And
right, yes,
decisions
yes,
through fear.
Yeah, sorry. So what I'm saying is this, to push you on back on it, is that gives me more fear about why I want to have my kid, because fear is a sign of weakness.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we both read self-improvement books and history books and stuff like that. We know that when there's weak people, what's going to happen afterwards? It's going to have tough times.
Mm-hmm.
And aren't we kind of going through
transitioning
right
through a tough time,
yeah,
and tough
and
times make
tough
people.
And tough people makes good times, and good
mm-hmm.
time makes
prosperity
and you know,
yeah,
weak people, right? I would say our last 20 something years,
very prosperous,
very good time.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're entering into the part where fear,
mm-hmm.
the one of kids, fear, that's weak men, that's weak people. Mm-hmm. Weak people are gonna create tough times. And I like how I'm saying that, and I am not participating in solving this issue.
Least, but here's a beautiful thing about life. You get to make an informed choice of what is for you and what is not for you.
Yeah.
And I completely respect that. And that's a great thing about this podcast. We get to talk about whatever we want to talk about, with the risk of being canceled.
Yeah.
But,
and plus, it is rare for us to have extremely polar opposite opinions about
yeah.
a particular thing.
I just really think that, again, Joe would make a great father. I think your offspring would be a benefit to society and is exactly what we need to prevent further weakening of our species. That's agree to disagree.
Agree to disagree.
And we're going to tie it off.
Yeah.
That was our last serious article.
Yeah.
I think Joe pulled up one or two more of the lighter off-script
ones that I don't want to be reading out of this. I'm close this and then just talk about some articles that we might not feel like it's important enough for us to deep dive, but enough for us to do a quick rapid fire about what we think. You go
sure.
first.
Okay, there's an article about all the hikes in property taxes, parking, and whatnot. There's some public outcry. I think, I can't remember exactly. Can you refresh my memory? I only remember one of the comments was like, oh yeah, you need an extra
$200,000
instead of hiking the taxes, just fire two cops.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I read that article.
Literally, that guy took F the police word for word.
I mean, I have two thoughts. First of all, I thought we're having an inflation issue. Okay, that's my first problem with this article.
Yeah.
But you increasing the parking permit, I'm sorry, City of Vancouver, you're not helping with this inflation bullshit that's happening right now.
Spend
more money, right? That's the first thing. Why? There's a better way to tackle something. There's gotta be a better way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe tackle, like, I think in our case, it's the way we tackle, like, property owners or Airbnb people, whatever. Like, stop tackling your everyday average Joes, right? That's my first comment in regards to that article. My second comment is, can we stop firing police officers? Like, have you people not look around and be like, oh my god, Vancouver is a city where you get a bike and you lose it in 24 hours. You get an e-scooter, you lose that in 24 hours.
Or there's like a different assault on a random person every single day. I was just telling you 5 minutes before we started filming, like, oh, a woman in Richmond got attacked yesterday in the afternoon, broad daylight, 2 p.m. Was beaten, shoved to the ground, and had Coca-Cola poured on top of her head.
There you go.
WTF, guys.
So, like, first of all, don't increase it there. Second of all, if you want to take budget away, please don't stop. We need more police officers.
We do, but I definitely don't think that police need to be driving Tesla Model Ys
mm-hmm.
as part of their fleet.
For sure.
Just saying.
Well, for sure, for sure. I have a quick article here stating about our inflation for last month hitting 4%.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you think it's going to do with our next month? Whatever you think.
I think they'll leave it for another month. And then if inflation goes up again, then they'll bump it up. I think their goal is to lower the interest rate by middle of next year. But again, that's their forecast. So we'll see. I mean, you already know we've been in a recession for a while now. Now Canada has finally admitted to it.
Yeah.
Because the numbers don't lie. People do.
Yeah.
We always say that.
Mm-hmm.
So we just have to kind of see how it all plays out.
No, totally agree. Totally agree. I think the Bank of Canada is in a very particular situation now. I mean, all the premiers, starting with our premier, David Abbey, already wrote a letter
mm-hmm.
to the Bank of Canada, be like, can we stop? And then I think a couple of the premiers actually added on top of that. I understand with the Bank of Canada, their ultimate goal is to hit 2%. And everybody has said that, you know, the most difficult one is really literally the last 2%, which is right now where we're in for 4%.
Mm-hmm.
I think they will raise interest rate again. I think as soon as the next one, to be honest,
mm-hmm.
that's my take to it. Ultimately, not because, oh, Bank of Canada, whatever, it's just Bank of Canada, they have another focus, and their focus is 2%. And I'm starting to have a feeling that they're willing to drag everybody to that finish line if that's what's necessary.
I don't disagree with you necessarily. I totally see that as a possible scenario happening. I've been talking to some people. They think there's actually going to be two more rate hikes. So we'll see.
We'll see.
I just think that the government as a whole, like at some point, you have to not be so rigid about certain things and really look at the whole picture.
Like, for example, that stupid parking permit that we were just talking about.
Yeah, and how it affects like everybody as a whole. But hey, since when has the government really looked after every single person's best interest at heart?
Okay.
They can't, because there's just too many polarizing views.
Yeah. And yeah.
So if they nail the top 1%, great. Job well done. Pat on the back.
Good job.
Government of Canada.
Agreed. Agreed.
Yeah.
Okay. That's... You have another one?
Okay. This is the last one.
No, I have one. You go. I have another one. You go.
Okay. I don't remember the exact details. We'll have it up here, though. That there was somewhere in Vancouver where a bike lane got speed bumps installed into it, but the road did not have the same.
Wait, what? Wait. I didn't read this article.
So
wait,
actually,
what?
It said that there were speed bumps in the bike lane, but not in the lane for cars.
Are they tackling people like me with the e-scooters?
Could be, because you know people like you are zipping around at like 40 kilometers.
I'm not zipping
without a helmet, not following road signs. I see that on the daily. You know, I even see these people on those little food delivery e-scooters zipping between cars during traffic, and I'm like, you know what? You got a death wish, buddy. I wish you well, but it really pisses me off. That's one thing that definitely triggers me.
Okay, well, I'm gonna make it clear, I'm the guy with the full motorcycle helmet with the gear, and I do use the bike lane. I don't ever get on the crosswalk, nor do I get on the road, okay? Because I know how dangerous those shit are. Okay, interesting enough, I don't understand why they did that, to be honest. Like, if you're gonna do it, you might as well do it to the road. I just sometimes feel like this is another perfect example of the city just spending money where they're not necessarily needing to.
100%.
And I feel like this is more, once again, politics. What is that word? Bureaucracy? Yeah, bureaucracy. More than anything else. That's just my thought, right? Mm. I had another article in place. What is this article that I thought about? That was in my mind not too long ago. Oh my god. Oh! Comments on City of Vancouver approving 8 units per lot.
Someone say micro homes?
I don't. 33 by 122 is 4,000. Is it 4,000? I'll just say 4,000. Your ratio as well is, let's say you bump it up to 75%, so that's 4,000 times by 70% is...
What, 3,000?
3,000. 3,000 divided by 8. That's...
400 square... 300... just under 400 square feet.
Oh, so it's like a little micro hotel every single lot.
Yeah, or you just get one of those studios at Vancouver House. Same thing, right?
Yeah.
373 square feet.
Are you plus? Are you negative? What do you think about it? You're like, I'm speechless.
At this point, if someone's gonna do it, just go and do it. Okay, if you're adding more supply to the market,
yeah,
just do it.
Okay.
I really don't give a fuck.
I don't know how the design. I mean, I told you when they were saying 6, I'm already like, I don't know how this is.
Like, call it a dorm room.
It's like, now it's 8, right? And that brings me, have you drove by Marine Drive last a little bit towards UBC, and on the left hand side, those mansion houses?
Oh, yeah,
I don't even know.
They look a little strange.
They look like dormitory. They don't look residential at all. I need to look more into it, but is that the future? Just every single lot is just a dormitory?
Yeah,
that
I
would
don't
be
know.
Crazy.
Maybe.
Here's another thing is there going to be enough builders that's willing to even attempt on building something like this? Because, what are you going to do? Like, build it and sell 8 studio units?
I mean, would it be that much more difficult? You're just building like smaller hotels.
Yes, it will be a lot more difficult because instead of 2 kitchens, you now have to add an 8. Drainage, piping, everything.
Yeah,
right?
It does become a lot more complicated.
It's just interesting how, to me, it's not about actually getting things done in a more manageable manner. It's about, oh, what can I do to get people off my back? right? What I mean by that is, instead of saying, oh, everybody can build 8, why don't we just follow Texas and get a building permit in 3 months?
Mm-hmm.
Right? That, I think that is one of the core issues right now,
mm-hmm.
is that not only are builders' interest rates so high, they have to wait years. Right? It's the average of a year to build something.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If we could shorten that into 3 months to reduce the amount of cost, then the developer don't have, or builders don't have to think about, oh, how many more units can I squeeze into this one to maximize my profit?
Well, I think a year is being generous. I have a builder who's been waiting almost 2 years to build in Richmond.
Yeah. So that's kind of my thought on that as
mm-hmm.
well. Right? You want to add anything else?
I really think that's about it.
Okay.
I think today was definitely a bit of a longer episode.
Yeah.
Of course, it was a lot of the important topics.
Yeah.
If you guys have any comments or questions, please feel free to let us know.
Okay.
If not, as always, you should know by now that my name is Jeff.
My name is Joe.
We're the Micro Vancouver Real Estate. We really appreciate it if you guys like, comment, subscribe, send it to your best friend, your significant other. It really helps the podcast
yeah.
grow.
Yeah.
And we will see you next week for another episode, which is probably Market Update.
See you.